One of the things that I wanted to cover tonight, I had been doing a series of lessons on money matters, about employment, and there's one other topic that's kind of related to that I wanted to cover at the same time. There are many things that we take for granted in our lives that we don't really think about why or where they come from. One of them is the fact that none of us individually are able to produce everything that we need. Imagine a life where you had to produce everything for yourself. You know that car you drove to services? Would you be able to put one together? Well, what if you're also required to do the design and manufacture the parts yourself? Oh, and what if you had to gather the raw materials yourself to make those parts? Oh, and the gas that it uses. Imagine cooking that up in your backyard from crude oil. And you start thinking about all the things that we just assume and take for granted because somebody else did it. And we merely purchase it. It's hard to imagine doing everything ourselves because we individually are limited. We're limited in our education, we're limited in our skills, and most importantly, we're all limited in our time. We just don't have time to do everything ourselves. Hence, what we do is we specialize. I produce things that I'm good at and exchange those things for things that you are good at producing. And how that exchange takes place then becomes the basis of various economic systems that are out there. There is, by the way, no pure economic system in the world. You know, we talk about different types of economic systems, but the pure ones are all in the theories. There's no actual one that actually exists in any one country or any one place. They break down a piece of the exchange that's going on and describe why they're acceptable to the participants, is what those economic systems talk about. Here's how we're going to manage this, the fact that you do one thing special and I do one thing special, and how we exchange and come up with a reason for that exchange. Now, in every country and in every age, there have been a variety of systems in use simultaneously in different parts of the world. And generally, when we speak of an economic system of a country, we really speak about the dominant one that exists. Not to say, like I said, there was a pure system out there. Now, various systems are popular or unpopular with individuals. And I'll hear every once in a while Christians talk about the merits or the demerits of various systems. And you hear it on the radio all the time. I was fascinated because I picked out this lesson about a month ago that I was going to do this. And just last week there was, on one of the commentary shows, they were talking about some news article that was basically saying that the communist system, which is an economic system, was not as bad as everybody imagined it to be. And they were commenting about that particular article. In fact, communism, basically, if you want to look at it that way, is a system that everybody loves to hate. It's very popular, especially in this country, to say there's something wrong with it. But what disturbs me is when Christians begin to think that their favored system is the only acceptable system in the world. In fact, there have been in the past, and I'm sure there's going to be in the future, whole denominations that were created around the denial, for instance, of private ownership of goods. The Shakers were one of those. Whole system was developed with the idea that we're going to deny private ownership. Everything is going to be jointly held by the community. So in order to understand this, and you'll see the biblical background about it, and I want to talk about the moral backgrounds, the moral implications of these. It seems like a a strange topic to be bringing up in services, but it does have a Bible basis to it. So we're going to talk about economic systems. There are two basic styles, if you would. There's one that's called the market economy. Market economy operates on a voluntary exchange. It's not planned, it's not controlled by any central authority. Okay, so those types of systems where people choose to make some type of exchange. Now, one style is called anarchism. You don't see it much. But in anarchism, there's a complete rejection of any central authority, such as government. Basically, individuals should have, in an anarchism type of style, individuals are argued that they should have the complete free choice with no government intervention. Concentration of decisions of power, even in corporations, are usually rejected in this. Everybody individually makes their own choices. Another system that's also called a market economy is one that we are very familiar with, which we call capitalism. That's where you have private ownership of goods and production that allows the individual to make a profit. Ideally, the government involvement is kept to a minimum, and the free market then determines the direction based on supply and demand. And the emphasis is on competition and making a profit. Another set is called the planned economy. Here we do have central authority that makes a wide range of decisions pertaining to production and wages and everything that has to do with exchange. One of the older ones is called feudalism. You probably remember reading about in your history books, and you think about the knights in shining armor and all that other stuff. But feudalism is where a central authority owns all the land, like the king. And then that king grants the rights to portions of the land based on the contract of loyalty and service that's given to the king. Okay, because you are willing to be a loyal servant of mine, I will give you grant to this so many acres of land. You may produce it. You owe me taxes. If I need men for war, you will supply them. And there's exchange. There's a contract that goes on. These people then in turn subdivide their land to other individuals based on contracts of loyalty and service. And at the very bottom of the totem pole, basically, is the non-landowners, who basically simply exchange service for protection by the landowner. Another style is socialism. That's where you have a collective or a government ownership and management of production and distribution. Emphasis is placed on cooperation and social services. That's why the name socialism. You're doing it for the good of the greater group. But it's collective ownership. Communism is a form of socialism, where property is held in common, and there is no private ownership. Individuals are held to be equal and to share equal benefits from what everybody commonly produces and owns. So there's a quick economic survey, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch more, but this will suffice for our talk tonight. The question we want to look at is one economic system more moral than another? One university professor, Robert H. Nelson, noted that any economic system must be based on considerable degree of honesty and altruistic behavior in order to function. Every single economic system out there basically at its base has to assume that the people involved are honest. If you don't, no economic system will work. And that they have some degree of willingness to say, I need to be kind to other people. Again, otherwise the economic system won't work. But let's look at anarchism. Now, it's very popular. Let's just get rid of everything. Let's just get rid of all the government. Just let whatever happens, happens. The problem with it, as far as morality goes, is it denies the legitimacy of government to exist. From the scriptural point of view. In Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13. And starting with verse 1. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. And they who oppose will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause for fear for good because of, for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise for the same. But for it is a minister of God for you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore it is necessary to be in subjection, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. For because of this, you pay also taxes. For rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. What God is saying, and what Paul is saying, based on the inspiration of God, is that governments need to exist. At its root, it needs to be able to separate the good from the evil, to praise the good and punish the evil. If you have a system in which there is no central authority, you will have piracy. You will have robbery. You will have people cheating and stealing and doing all sorts of fraud. You need a government in there to maintain some level of honesty in the system. There will always be products that some people will be willing to purchase and others to sell, which are neither good for the individual or for society as a whole. If you don't understand it, take recreational drugs. The reason why we say drugs are illegal is because they cause harm on the individual and for society as a whole. What about pornography or prostitution? Should you be able to hire an assassin if you can find someone who is willing to kill another individual for you? How about extortion? That's the paying of money to keep somebody from harming you. Should that be legal? See, there's a whole host of sinful practices that are technically would be available unless the government existed and imposed an immoral standard of at least some sort on the country. Anarchism doesn't work because it allows immorality free reign. And it would not be something a Christian would want to support. Now, another economic system we already mentioned was capitalism. Capitalism is always faulted, or usually faulted, because it rewards the greedy. Now, what I should first note is that greed exists independent of any economic system. It's true. Capitalism doesn't prevent greed. But you know what? No economic system can prevent a sin such as greed. Greed exists in every economic system. The question, though, is capitalism something that is allowed or morally right within the scriptures? The right to private ownership and decision is noted in the Bible. Take a look at Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5 and verse 4. This is when Ananias lied about how much he gave to the church. Peter there says in Acts chapter 5 verse 4, "While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not under your control? Why have you been conceiving this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God." Peter's point is, hey, when you still own the land, it was yours. You could do whatever with it you wanted to. When you sold it and got money from it, you could have done anything you wanted with that money. That was your money. But it became something different when he lied about how much he gave to the church. That became something different. No one compelled Ananias to sell his property. No one forced him to contribute it to the disciples. His sin was not that he kept a portion of the proceeds, but that he lied about how much he had gave. He claimed he gave all of what he sold the property for, and he didn't. Now, on a related note, capitalism is faulted because it provides no incentive for aiding the poor. That's usually another thing that people claim is a problem with capitalism. But you also should note that capitalism doesn't prevent the aiding of the poor either. It goes in both directions. In fact, what we find in Ephesians 4, Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 28, it says, "He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with the one who has need." Here in the scriptures, there's encouragement to earn funds for the opportunity to aid the less fortunate. In fact, that's a capitalistic idea. Earn more money than you need so that you have the ability then to help the needy. True, helping the needy has no capitalistic reward, but the motivation for helping the needy is not financial but righteous. It's not because it's an economic decision, it's a right decision, a moral decision. Those systems where wages are fixed, regardless of effort, will not allow this command to occur. Because you'll never earn more than you need. Because somebody's always saying, this is as much as you need. Because the wages are then fixed. Now, another one that's common, and it's very common in the world today, is socialism. Socialism basically depends on the decision body that is unfortunately prone to corruption. Therein lies the problem with socialism. We got somebody deciding what's going to be done, but wherever you got a group of people, there's going to be corruption. Take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. And we're going to read verse 8. "If you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness and providence, do not be shocked at the sight. For one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them." He's basically saying wherever you got a system, you got a bureaucracy. You got people over people over people, and there's bound to be some people in that bureaucracy who's corrupt. It's just the nature of man. Because men can be corrupt, and because socialism concentrates decisions, making power, in the hands of a few, the possibility of the system being corrupted is quite high. And that's what we generally see in the world around us. Where capitalism brings no natural restraint on greed, the problem with socialism is envy. It espouses self-sacrifice, but it's not voluntary self-sacrifice. Those who are more productive are told they must give all, whether they agree to it or not. Those who are less productive, who demand that they have a share of what the productive have earned, and all that is simply institutionalized envy. You make more than me, therefore I should have part of it. Envy is a desire to not only possess another person's wealth, but also the desire to see another's wealth lowered to the level of one's own. That is what envy is. Now, some people look and say, well, wait a minute. Wasn't Israel socialistic? And what's usually referred to is the fact that all the land belonged to God. But that's actually feudalism. But take a look at Leviticus chapter 25. Leviticus 25, verse 23. The land, moreover, shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine, for you are but aliens and sojourners with me. Thus, for every piece of your property, you are to provide for the redemption of the land. All the land belonged to God. The Israelites were told to look at it as you are renting it from God. But that's not socialism. Because on the Jubilee year, every 50 years, the land reverted back to the original family. There was always an owner of record. Take a look at Leviticus 25, verse 28. But if he has not found sufficient means to get it back for himself, then what he has sold shall remain in the hands of the purchaser until the year of Jubilee. But at the Jubilee, it shall revert that he may return to his property. Land always went back to the owner of record. Nor do you see in Israel any central body deciding what has to be produced, or the amount that needs to be produced, or the prices that should be charged, or the wages that should be earned. All these are features of socialism. That's not in Israelite societies. Israel was not a socialistic society. In fact, instead of concentration, what you really see in the scriptures is a teaching of diversification is better than centralization. In Ecclesiastes 11, Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and in verse 6, sow your seed in the morning, and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether in the morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. Diversify what you're involved in. You don't know if what one job or the other job is going to do better, so don't be dependent on one particular source. Socialism says, no, you concentrate and you get dependent on one source. Now, next system is communism. Communism is often popularly faulted because it rewards the lazy. Since income is fixed regardless of effort, there is no built-in motivation in communism to provide any additional effort. Because any effort that you do just goes to the group as a whole. But what we find in the scriptures in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, in verse 10, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10, it says, for even while we were with you, we used to give this order, if anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. If you were living under a communist system, then this command would then basically be one that you would have to invoke on yourself because of matters of righteousness, not because you get something out of the system for it. Okay, it becomes a moral decision instead of a financial decision. As opposed to the market economy where this rule is built in. You don't work, you don't get money. You don't get money, you don't eat. It's just an automatic in a market system. But in a communistic system, you would have to say it's immorally required for you to work. Now, usually what you'd find people say, well, wait a minute, the early Christians, they were communistic. And what they do is mistake the generosity that's found in the scriptures with communism. See, in communism, there is no choice about sharing. Everything is held in common, whether you desire it or not. But take a look at Acts chapter 2, and in verse 44. Acts chapter 2. Starting with verse 44. It says, "And all those who believed were together and had all things in common. And they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them all as anyone might have need." Was anyone forcing these people to do this? The answer is no. These people were choosing to do it. They were willing to share what they had with each other. Take a look at Acts chapter 4. Starting with verse 32. "And the congregation of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and not one of them claimed that anything belonging to him was his own, but all things were common property to them. And with great power the apostles were giving testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and abundant grace was upon them all. For there was not a needy person among them, for all who were owners of land or houses would sell them and bring the proceeds of the sales and lay them at the apostles' feet, and they would distribute to each as any had need. Now Joseph the Levite of Cyprium birth was also among, called Barnabas by the apostles, which translates the son of encouragement, and who owned a tract of land, sold it, and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet." Notice something here. The disciples had ownership of things. Joseph had a tract of land that he owned. That's not communistic. He sold it voluntarily to give to those who are in need. In a communistic society, everything is already owned by everybody. There would not be a selling and a distribution of the wealth. Take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 9. We're going to start with verse 5. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 5. "So I thought it was necessary to urge the brethren that they should go on ahead of you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gifts, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness. Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. As is written, he scatters abroad, he gave to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You have enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God. For the ministry of this service is not only supplying the needs of the saints, but also overflowing, because many thanksgivings to God. Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ, for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all, while they also, by prayer on your behalf, yearn for you because of the surpassing grace of God that is in you. Thanks to God for his indescribable gift." Now, I want you to notice, in this giving, the emphasis is on the fact it is voluntary. No one forced these Christians to give. In fact, it says it has to be given without compulsion. Communism is a system where it is compulsive to share everything that you have. It was by individual's choice. by their own purpose. And what we notice as you look through the years is communistic societies, especially the ones in recent years, prove that people remain materialistic. Yeah, you have a society that sounds that, oh, we're not, everybody's going to share all material things and nobody's going to be concerned about greed. But in a communistic society, people spend long hours in lines to obtain consumer goods that are available only in limited supply. They're still trying to get things. They just use time instead. Black markets arise to obtain sought-after items that are not generally available. In other words, we got to cheat the system in order to gain what we want. They don't have as much material, but if you look at communistic societies, they still seek them. Now, the reason for going through all this is there's good points and bad points about every type of market system out there, or planned system that's out there. Morality is not found in any economic system. When someone starts saying this system is more moral than another system, they don't really know what they're talking about. Now, different systems encourage different parts of morality or discourage them in various ways, but they don't create morality. What's interesting, though, is no economic system can operate without moral people, though. There cannot be exchange of goods or service without a basic trust between the producer and the consumer. In other words, lying is bad for the economy. The problem with economic models is that really every one of them leaves God out of the equation. They try to set up a system that will kind of somewhat produce whatever that person thinks is a more moral society, but they're trying to do it without God. See, Israel learned that fallacy the hard way. In the Old Testament, in Haggai, one of those small books that we don't often get to in the end of your Old Testament, Haggai chapter 1, combine it. I'm having trouble finding it. There we go. Finally got the page. Haggai chapter 1, starting with verse 6. You have sown much, but harvest little. You eat, but there's not enough to be satisfied. You drink, but there's not enough to become drunk. You put on clothing, but no one is warm enough. And he who earns wages to put it into the purse with holes. Thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountains and bring wood and rebuild the temple that I may be pleased with it and be glorified, says the Lord. You look for much, but behold, it comes to little. When you bring it home, it blows away. Why, declares the Lord of hosts? Because my house which lies in desolation, while each of you runs to his own house. Therefore, because of you, the sky has withheld its dew, the earth has withheld its produce. I call for a drought on the land, and on the mountains, and on the grain, and on the new wine, and on the oil, and on the ground that produces, on men and on cattle, and all that is the labor of your hands. What's the problem? They're working. They're striving for profit. But they left God out of the equation. And no matter what they did, God was interfering. Also in the book of Haggai, chapter 2 and verse 17. I smote and every work of your hands with blasting wind, mildew, and hail. Yet you did not come back to me, declares the Lord. Do consider this from this day onward, from the 24th day of the ninth month, from the day when the temple of the Lord was founded. Consider, is the seed still in the barn? Even including the vine, the fig, the tree, the pomegranate, and the olive tree? It has not borne fruit. Yet from this day on, I will bless you. Again, if you don't put God into equation, God's not going to bless people. Righteousness, therefore, has to come first before prosperity. Going back to 2 Corinthians, this time in chapter 9 and verse 10, 2 Corinthians chapter 9, starting with verse 10, he said, "Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing, increase your harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God." Start with doing what is right, and then God will bless you. And liberally. But why is it that in these various economic systems, morality isn't factored in? Even though they say they're trying to increase it, it's not really factored in. And I think part of the problem is it's not measurable. And its effects, as God stated, is not predictable based on what a person does. But at the same time, it can't be ignored. The absence of righteousness has a greater detrimental effect than one would scientifically expect. You might sit down and do a study and say, well, what happens when the person doesn't give as much? How does that affect their income? It's hard to measure. But God says that effect is there. What happens when somebody's very generous? What's the effect on their income? Well, it's hard to measure. But God says that it does have an impact. And what's hard to measure, people have this tendency to ignore. What we should say is that Christians ought to have a unique view of the world. We don't serve money like the rest of the world does. See, the world measures success based on how much money they have. But in Luke chapter 16, Luke chapter 16 and verse 13, it says, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." A Christian serves God. Money is not what drives Christians in decision making. And yet at the same time, we have to use money to accomplish God's will. In the same chapter, Luke chapter 16, going back to verse 9, he says, "Then I say to you, make friends for yourselves by means of wealth of unrighteousness, so that when it fails, they will receive you into eternal dwellings." We have money, and he's basically saying, yeah, we don't work for money. It doesn't drive our decisions, but at the same time, if we have it, make use of it. To do God's will. And God judges our faithfulness in minor things, like the handling of money, to decide whether we ought to have major things. Again, in chapter 16, verse 10, "He who is faithful in very little things is faithful also in much. He who is unrighteous in very little things is unrighteous also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust you with true riches to you? And if you have not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, who will give to you that which is your own?" What we do with God's blessings basically is then a test for us. Are we doing righteousness with it? Or are we being greedy? Or are we being self-serving? How does the world then look at us? How does God then look at us? Christians should see themselves as stewards of God. What they possess is loaned to them by God for a period of time while we're here on earth. They should then use those possessions to further God's will while in this world. And whether they possess a little or whether they possess much is really up to God. But whatever they have, it should be used to the best of their ability to do what is right. Because in Ecclesiastes, the book of Ecclesiastes is about what is our purpose here on earth. Why did God put us here? The conclusion at the end of Ecclesiastes says, the conclusion when all has been heard is this. Fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether good or evil. We are going to be judged by what we do, the moral things that we do, not by how much money we manage to collect. Look over in Luke chapter 12, and in verse 42. Luke 12, verse 42. And the Lord said, who then is a faithful and sensible steward whom his master will put in charge of his servants to give them their rations at the proper time? Blessed is that slave to whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that slave says in his heart, my master will be a long time in coming, and begins to beat the slaves and both men and women, and to eat and to drink and get drunk, the master of this last slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour when he does not know, and will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. And that slave who knew his master's will and did not get ready or act in accord with his will receive many lashes. But the one who did not know it and committed deeds unworthy of a flogging, or deeds worthy of a flogging, will receive but a few. From everyone who has been given much, much will be required. And to whom they are trusting much, of him they will ask all the more. God gives us what we have. What do we do with it? He is our master. And we do not know when he's going to return. Have we been doing his will with what he has loaned us? We need to consider where our treasure is. In Matthew chapter 6, starting with verse 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and rusts destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's not about the money that we have on earth. It's just what we do with it. It's about our service to God and the righteousness that we present before him. There's where our focus ought to be. We have an opportunity this evening, if there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. For those of you who are children of God, we'd like the prayers of your brethren on your behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.